Chapter 31. A Tempest of Water. Egwene looked across the river at the struggle raging between her forces and the Sharan army. She'd arrived back at her camp on the Arafelin side of the ford. She was itching to join the battle against the Shadow again, but she also needed to talk with Bryn about what had happened at the hills. She had arrived to find the command tent empty. The camp continued to fill with Aes Sedai and the surviving archers and pikemen who were coming through gateways from the hilltops to the south. The Aes Sedai were milling about and speaking to each other with some urgency. They all seemed worn out, but it was clear from their frequent glances toward the battle taking place across the river that they were as eager as Egwene was to rejoin the fight against the Shadow. Egwene summoned the messenger who was standing in front of the command tent. "Get word to the sisters that they will have less than an hour to rest. Those Trollocs we were fighting will be joining the battle at the river soon, now that we have left the hills." She'd move the Aes Sedai downriver on this side, then attack them across the water as they moved across the fields to attack her soldiers. "Tell the archers they'll be marching with us as well," she added. "They may as well put their remaining arrows to good use, until we can get them another supply." As the messenger rushed off, Egwene turned to Lyalwyn, who was standing with her husband Bael Domon nearby. "Lyalwyn, those look like Seanchan cavalry troops across the river. Do you know anything about that?"
"Yes, mother, they are Seanchan. That man standing over there..."
She pointed to a man with shaved temples standing by a tree down toward the river. He wore voluminous trousers and, incongruously, a tattered brown coat, which looked as if it might have come from the Two Rivers.
"He told me that a legion commanded by Lieutenant General Kirgan had come from the Seanchan camp, and that they had been summoned by General Bryn."
"He also said that they do be accompanied by the Prince of Ravens," Domon interjected.
"Matt?"
"He did more than accompany them. He do be leading one of the cavalry banners, the ones giving the Sharans a hiding on our army's left flank. He got there just in time. Our pikemen were getting the worst of it before he showed up."
"Egwene," Gawain said, pointing. To the south, a few hundred paces below the ford, a small number of soldiers were hauling themselves from the river. They had stripped to their small clothes and carried swords tied to their backs. It was too far to be sure, but one of their leaders looked familiar. "Is that Uno?" Egwene frowned, then waved for her horse. She mounted and galloped with Gawain and her guards along the river to where the men lay gasping on the bank, and the sound of one man cursing filled the air.
"Uno! It's about bloody flaming time someone came."
Uno stood as he saluted in respect.
"Mother, we're in bad shape."
"I saw." Egwene gritted her teeth. "I was in the hills when your force was attacked. We did what we could, but there were just too many of them. How did you get out?"
"How did we flaming get out, mother? When the men started dropping all around us and we figured we were goners, we flaming rode out of there like a flaming lightning bolt had struck our flaming hindquarters. We got to the frog-kissing river on the run, stripped and jumped in, swimming for all we were bloody worth, mother, with all due respect."
Uno's topknot danced as he continued to blaspheme, and Egwene could have sworn the eye painted on his eye patch became a more intense red. Uno took a deep breath and continued, a little more subdued.
"I can't understand it, mother. Some goat-headed messenger told us that the Aes Sedai on the hills were in trouble and we needed to go up the flaming backsides of the Trollocs attacking them. I said, who's going to mind the left flank at the river? And for that bloody matter, our own bloody flank when we attacked the Trollocs. And he said that General Bryn had that taken care of. Reserve cavalry would move up into our position at the river, and the Ilianers would watch out for our bloody flanks. Some protection they were, all right. One flaming squadron like a flaming fly trying to fend off a flaming falcon. Oh, they were just waiting for us, like they knew we was coming. No, Mother, this can't be the fault of Gareth Bryn. We've been tricked by some sheep-gutted, milk-drinking traitor. With all due respect, Mother.
I can't believe that, Uno. I just heard that General Bryn had brought in a legion of Shanshan cavalry. Maybe they were simply late getting here. We'll sort it all out when I find the general. Meanwhile, get your men back to camp so they can have a proper rest. Light knows you've earned it. Uno nodded, and Egwene galloped back toward camp. Using Vora's Sangreal, Egwene wove air and water, spinning them together. A funnel of water surged up, drawn from the river beneath. Egwene blew her tornado of water into the Trollocs that were beginning their assault against her army's left flank on the Kandori side of the river. Her tempest of water surged across them. It wasn't strong enough to pull any of them into the air. She didn't have the energy for that. But it drove them back, hands to their faces. Behind her and the other Aes Sedai positioned on the Arafelan side of the river, archers loosed volleys of arrows into the sky. Those didn't darken the sky the way she would have liked. There weren't so many. But they did take down more than 100 Trollocs with each wave. To the side, Pilar and a couple of other Browns, all adept with weaves of earth, caused the ground to erupt under the charging Trollocs. Spread out next to her, Mirel and a large contingent of Greens wove fireballs that they lobbed over the water into bunched-up groups of Trollocs, many of whom continued to run a considerable distance before they collapsed, engulfed in flames. The Trollocs howled and roared, but continued their relentless progress against the defenders at the river's edge. At one point, several ranks of Shanshan cavalry moved out from the defensive lines and attacked the Trolloc onslaught head-on. It happened so quickly that many of the Trollocs were unable to raise their spears before contact was made. Large swaths of the foe in the front ranks went down. The Shanshan swept to the side and returned to their lines at the river. Egwene held to her channeling, forcing herself to work through sheer exhaustion. But the Trollocs didn't break. They grew enraged, attacking the humans with a frenzy. Egwene could hear their yells distinctly over the sounds of wind and water. The Trollocs grew angry, did they? Well, they would not know anger until they had felt that of the Ammerlin's seat. Egwene pulled in more and more of the power until she was at the very edges of her ability. She put heat into her tempest, so that the scalding water burned Trolloc eyes, hands, hearts. She felt herself yelling, Vora's Sangreal thrust before her like a spear. What seemed like hours went by. Eventually, exhausted, she allowed Gawain to talk her into pulling back for a time. Gawain went to fetch her horse, and as he was returning, Egwene looked across the river. There was no doubt about it. Her army's left flank had already been pushed another 30 paces. Even with the Aes Sedai aid, they were losing this battle. It was long past time for her to find Gareth Bryn. When Egwene and Gawain got back to camp, she climbed from her horse and gave it to Lyalwyn, telling her to use it to help carry the wounded. There were plenty of those who had been dragged across the ford to safety, bloodied soldiers slumping against the arms of friends. Unfortunately, she hadn't the strength for healing, let alone a gateway to send wounded to Tar Valon or Mayenne. Most of the Aes Sedai not busy at the riverbank didn't look as if they were doing any better.
Egwene, Gawain said softly. Rider, Shanshan, looks like a noblewoman.
One of the blood? Egwene thought, standing and looking through camp toward where Gawain pointed. At least he had the strength left to keep a lookout. Why any woman would voluntarily go without a warder was beyond her.
The woman approaching wore fine Shan Chan silks, and Egwene's stomach turned at the sight. That finery existed because of a foundation of enslaved channelers, forced into obedience to the Crystal Throne. The woman was certainly one of the blood, as a contingent of Death Watch guards accompanied her. You had to be very important for... Light, Gawain exclaimed. Is that Min? Egwene gaped. It was. Min rode up, scowling. Mother, she said to Egwene, bowing her head amid her stone-faced guards in dark armor. Min, are you well? Egwene asked. Careful. Don't give out too much information. Was Min a captive? Surely she couldn't have joined the Shan Chan, could she? Oh, I'm well, Min said sourly. I've been pampered, stuffed in this outfit, and offered all sorts of somewhat delicate foods. I might add that among the Shan Chan, delicate does not necessarily mean tasty. You should see the things they drink, Egwene. I've seen them, Egwene said, unable to keep her tone from coldness. Oh, yes, I suppose you have. Mother, we have a problem. What kind of problem? Well, it depends on how much you trust Matt. I trust him to find trouble, Egwene said. I trust him to find drinking and gambling no matter where he goes. Do you trust him to lead an army? Min asked. Egwene hesitated. Did she? Min leaned forward, sparing a glance for the Death Watch guards, who didn't seem about to let her draw any closer to Egwene. Egwene, she said softly, Matt thinks that Bryn is leading your army to destruction. He says he thinks Bryn is a dark friend. Gawain started laughing. Egwene jumped. She would have expected anger from him. Outrage.
Gareth Bryn? Gawain asked. A dark friend? I'd believe my own mother to be a dark friend before him. Tell Cawthon to stay out of his wife's royal brandy. He's obviously had too much.
I'm inclined to agree with Gawain, Egwene said slowly. Still, she could not ignore the irregularities in how the army was being led. She would sort through that. Matt is always looking out for people who don't need to be looked out for, she said. He's just trying to protect me. Tell him that we appreciate the... warning. Mother, Min said. He seemed certain. This isn't a joke. He wants you to turn your armies over to him. My armies, Egwene said flatly. Yes, in the hands of Matrim Cawthon. Yes, I should mention the Empress has given him command of all the Shan Chan forces. He's now Marshal General Cawthon.
Taviran.
Egwene shook her head. Matt is a good tactician, but handing him the White Tower's armies...
No,
that is beyond possibility. Besides, the armies are not mine to give him. The Hall of the Tower has authority for them. So how can we persuade these gentlemen surrounding you that you'll be safe accompanying me? As little as Egwene wanted to admit it, she needed the Shan Chan. She wouldn't risk their alliance to save Min, particularly since it didn't seem that she was in immediate danger. Of course, if the Shan Chan realized that Min had sworn their oaths back in Falma, then fled. Don't worry about me, Min said with a grimace. I suppose I'm better off with Fortuona. She knows about a certain talent of mine, thanks to Matt. And it might let me help her. And you. The statement was laden with meaning. The Death Watch guards were too stoic to respond overtly to Min's use of the Empress's name, but they did seem to stiffen, their faces hardening.
Take care, Min, Egwene thought. You're surrounded by autumn thorn weeds.
Min didn't seem to care.
Will you at least consider what Matt is saying?
That Gareth Bryn is a dark friend? Egwene said. It really was laughable. Go back and tell Matt to submit his battle suggestions to us if he must. For now I need to find my commanders to plan our next steps.
Gareth Bryn, where are you?
A flight of black arrows rose almost invisibly into the air, then fell like a breaking wave. They hit Iteralda's army at the mouth of the pass to the valley of Thakandar, some bouncing off shields, others finding flesh. One fell inches from where Iteralda stood atop a rocky outcropping. Iteralda didn't flinch. He stood straight-backed, hands clasped behind him. He did, however, mutter, "Letting things draw a little close, aren't we?" Binda, the Ashaman who stood beside him in the night, grimaced.
"Sorry, Lord Iteralda."
He was supposed to keep the arrows away. He'd done well so far. Sometimes, however, he got a distant look in his face and started muttering about them, trying to take his hands.
"Stay sharp," Iteralda said.
His head throbbed. More dreams earlier tonight, so real. He had seen Trollocs eating members of his family alive, and had been too weak to save them. He had struggled and wept as they ate Tamsin and his children, but at the same time had been lured by the sense of the boiling and burning flesh. At the end of the dream, he had joined the monsters in their feast.
"Put that from your mind," he thought.
It was not easy to do so. The dreams had been so vivid. He had been glad to be awakened by a Trolloc attack. He'd been ready for this. His men lit bonfires at the barricades. The Trollocs had finally pushed through his thorn fortifications, but their butcher's bill had been high. Now Iteralda's men fought at the mouth of the pass, holding the tides back from entering the valley. They had applied their time well during the days the Trollocs had pushed their way through arduous barriers to the mouth of the pass. The entrance to the valley was now fortified with a series of chest-high earthen bulwarks. These would be excellent for crossbowmen to use as cover if Iteralda's pike formations were ever pushed back too far. For now, Iteralda had split his army into groups of around 3,000 men each, then organized them into square formations of pikes, billhooks, and crossbows. He used mounted crossbowmen as skirmishers in the front and on the flanks, and had formed up a vanguard, about 6 ranks deep, of pikemen. Big pikes, 20 feet long. He'd learned from Maradon that you wanted to keep your distance from the Trollocs. Pikes worked wonderfully. Iteralda's pike squares could pivot and fight in all directions in case they were surrounded. Trollocs could be forced to fight in ranks, but these squares, properly applied, could break up their lines. Once the Trolloc ranks were shattered, the Aiel could kill with abandon. Behind ranks of pikemen, he positioned foot soldiers carrying billhooks and halberds. Sometimes Trollocs fought their way through the pikes, pushing the weapons aside or pulling them down with the weight of corpses. The billhookmen then moved up, slipping between the pikemen, and hamstrung the leading Trollocs. This gave the leading foot soldiers time to pull back and regroup while the next wave of soldiers, more foot with pikes, moved up to engage the Trollocs. It was working, so far. He had a dozen such squares of troops facing the Trollocs in the night. They fought defensively, doing whatever they could to break the surging tide. The Trollocs threw themselves at the pikemen, trying to crack them, but each square operated independently. Iteralda didn't worry about the Trollocs that made it through the gauntlet, because they would be handled by the Aiel. Iteralda had to keep his hands clasped behind his back to conceal their shaking. Nothing had been the same after Maradon. He'd learned, but he'd paid dearly for that education.
"Burn these headaches," he thought, "and burn those Trollocs."
3 times he had nearly given the order to send his armies in with a direct assault, abandoning the square formations. He could imagine them slaughtering, killing, no more delaying. He wanted blood. Each time he'd stopped himself. They weren't here for blood, they were here to hold, to give that man the time he needed in the cavern. That was what it was all about, wasn't it? Why did he have such terrible trouble remembering that lately? Another wave of Trolloc arrows dropped onto Iteralda's men. The Fades had some of them stationed on the tops of the slopes above the pass in places that Iteralda's own archers had once held. Getting them up there must have been quite an undertaking. The walls of the pass were very steep. How many would have dropped to their deaths making the attempt? Regardless, Trollocs weren't good shots with bows, but they didn't need to be when firing at armies. The halberdiers raised shields. They couldn't fight while holding those, but they kept them strapped to their backs for need. The falling arrows increased, plummeting through the lightly foggy night air. The storm rumbled overhead, but the windfinders were at their task again, keeping it away. They claimed that at several moments the army had been mere breaths away from an all-out storm of destruction. At one point, hail the size of a man's fist had fallen for about a minute before they'd wrested control of the weather again. If that was what awaited them if the windfinders weren't using their bowl, Iteralda was more than happy to leave them at their task. The Dark One wouldn't care how many Trollocs he destroyed while sending a blizzard, twister, or hurricane to kill the humans they fought. "They're gathering for another surge at the mouth of the pass," someone yelled in the night air, followed by other calls confirming it. Iteralda peered through the mist, aided by light from the bonfires. The Trollocs were indeed regrouping.
"Withdraw the 7th and 9th Infantry squads," Iteralda said. "They've been at it too long. Pull the 4th and 5th out of reserve and have them take flanking positions. Prepare for more arrows, and—"
He trailed off, frowning. What were those Trollocs doing? They'd pulled back farther than he'd have expected, drawing into the darkness of the pass. They couldn't be retreating, could they? A dark wave slid out of the mouth of the pass. Murdral. Hundreds upon hundreds of them. Black cloaks that did not move in defiance of the breeze. Faces with no eyes, lips that sneered, black swords. The creatures moved like eels, sinuous and sleek. They gave no time for orders, no time for response. They flowed into the squares of defenders, sliding between pikes, whipping deadly swords.
"Aiel!" Iteralda bellowed. "Bring in the Aiel! All of them! And channelers! Everyone except for those who guard at the Pit of Doom itself! Move! Move!"
Messengers scrambled away. Iteralda watched in horror. An army of Murdral. Light, it was as bad as his nightmares. The 7th Infantry collapsed before the attack, square formation shattering. Iteralda opened his mouth to order the primary reserve, the one defending his position, to give support. He needed the cavalry to ride out and draw pressure off the infantry. He didn't have much cavalry. He'd agreed that most of the horsemen would be needed on other fronts, but he did have some. They'd be essential here. Except... He squeezed his eyes shut. Light, but he was exhausted. He had trouble thinking. "Pull back before the attack," a voice seemed to be saying to him. "Pull back to the Aiel, then make a stand there."
"Pull back," he whispered. "Pull."
Something felt very, very wrong about doing that. Why was his mind insisting upon it?
"Captain Tahara,"
Iteralda tried to whisper,
"you have command."
It wouldn't come out. Something physical seemed to be holding his mouth shut. He could hear men screaming. What was happening? Dozens of men could die fighting a single Murdral. At Maradon, he'd lost an entire company of archers, 100 men to 2 Fades who had slipped into the city at night. His defensive squads were built to deal with Trollocs, to hamstring them, to drop them. The Fades would crack those pike squares open like eggs. Nobody was doing what needed to be done.
"My lord Iteralda,"
Captain Tahara said.
"My lord, what was it you said?"
If they retreated, the Trollocs would surround them. They needed to stand firm. Iteralda's lips opened to give the order to retreat.
"Pull the..."
Wolves. Wolves appeared in the fog like shadows. They leaped at the Murdral, growling. Iteralda started, spinning, as a man in furs pulled himself up onto the top of the rocky outcrop. Tahera stumbled back, calling for their guards. The newcomer in furs leaped for Iteralda and shoved him off the top of the rocks. Iteralda did not fight back. Whoever this man was, Iteralda was grateful to him, feeling a moment of victory as he fell. He hadn't given the order to retreat. He hit the ground, not far below, and it knocked the wind out of him. The wolves took his arms in gentle mouths and pulled him off into the darkness as he slowly drifted into unconsciousness.
Egwene sat in the camp as the battle for the border of Kandor continued. Her army held back the Trollocs. The Shan Shan fought alongside her troops just across the river. Egwene herself held a small cup of tea. Light! It was galling. She was the Amyrlin, but she was drained of energy. She still hadn't found Gareth Bryn, but that wasn't unexpected. He moved about. Sylviana was hunting him and should have word soon. Aes Sedai had been sent to take the wounded to Mayen. The sun drooped low in the sky, like an eyelid that refused to stay open. Egwene's hand shook as she held her cup. She could still hear the battle. It seemed that the Trollocs would fight into the night, grinding the human armies against the river. Distant shouts rose like the calls of an angry crowd, but the explosions from the channelers had slowed. She turned to Gawain. He didn't seem tired at all, though he was strangely pale. Egwene sipped her tea and silently cursed him. It was unfair, but she wasn't concerned with fairness right now. She could grumble at her warder. That was what they were for, wasn't it? A breeze blew through camp. She was a few hundred paces east of the ford, but she smelled blood in the air. Nearby, a squad of archers drew their bows at their commander's call, launching a volley of arrows. A pair of black-winged drakkar plummeted moments later, hitting the ground with dull thuds just beyond camp. More would come as it grew dark, and they had an easier time hiding against the sky. Matt. She felt strangely sick, thinking about him. He was such a blowhard, a carouser, leering at every pretty woman he met, treating her like a painting and not a person. He was Matt. Once, when Egwene had been around 13, he'd jumped into the river to save Kiem Lewin from drowning. Of course, she hadn't been drowning. She'd merely been dunked under the water by a friend, and Matt had come running, throwing himself into the water to help. The men of Emmons Field had made sport of him for months about that. The next spring, Matt had pulled Jer Alhune from the same river, saving the boy's life. People had stopped making fun of Matt for a while afterward. That was how Matt was. He'd grumbled and muttered all winter about how people made sport of him, insisting that next time he'd just let them drown. Then the moment he'd seen someone in danger, he'd gone splashing right back in. Egwene could remember gangly Matt stumbling from the river, little Jer clinging to him and gasping, a look of pure terror in his eyes. Jer had gone down without making a sound. Egwene had never realized that could happen. People who started to drown didn't yell or sputter or call for help. They just slipped under the water when everything seemed fine and peaceful. Unless Matt was watching. He came for me in the Stone of Tyr, she thought. Of course, he'd also tried to save her from the Aes Sedai, unwilling to believe she was Amyrlin. So which was this? Was she drowning or not? How much do you trust Matrim Cawthon? Min had asked. Light. I do trust him. Fool that I am, I do. Matt could be wrong. He often was wrong. But when he was right, he saved lives. Egwene forced herself to stand. She wavered, and Gawain came to her side. She patted him on the arm, then stepped away from him. She would not let the army see its Amyrlin so weak that she had to lean against someone for support.
What reports do we have from the other battlefronts?
Not much today, Gawain said. He frowned. In fact, it's been rather silent.
Elaine was supposed to fight at Carrion, Egwene said. It was an important battle.
She might be too occupied to send word.
I want you to send a messenger by gateway. I need to know how that battle is going.
Gawain nodded, hurrying off. After he was gone, Egwene walked at a steady pace until she found Sylviana, who was talking with a pair of blue sisters.
Bryn? Egwene asked. In the mess tent, Sylviana said. I only just had word. I sent a runner to tell him to stay put until you arrived. Come.
She walked over to the tent, the largest shelter in camp by far, and spotted him as she entered. Not eating, but standing against the cook's travel table, with his maps spread out. The table smelled of onions, which had probably been cut there time and time again. Yukiri had a gateway open in the floor to look down on the battlefield. She closed it as Egwene arrived. They didn't leave it open long, not with the Sharans watching for it and preparing weaves to send through it. Egwene whispered very quietly to Sylviana,
"Gather the hall of the tower. Bring back any sitters you can find. Get them all here to this tent as soon as you can."
Sylviana nodded, her face betraying no hint of the confusion she likely felt. She hastened off, and Egwene sat down in the tent. Swan wasn't there. She was likely helping with healing again. That was good. Egwene wouldn't have wanted to attempt this with Swan glaring at her. As it was, she worried about Gawain. He loved Bryn like a father, and already his anxiety streamed through their bond. She would have to approach this very delicately, and she didn't want to start until the hall had arrived. She couldn't accuse Bryn, but she couldn't ignore Matt. He was a scoundrel and a fool, but she trusted him. Light helper, but she did. She'd trust him with her life. And things had been going oddly on the battlefield. The sitters gathered relatively quickly. They had charge of the war effort, and they met together each evening to get reports and tactical explanations from Bryn and his commanders. Bryn didn't seem to think it odd that they came to him now. He kept at his work. Many of the women did give Egwene curious looks as they entered. She nodded to them, trying to convey the weight of the Ammerlin seat. Eventually enough of them had arrived that Egwene decided she should begin. Time was wasting. She needed to dismiss Matt's accusations from her mind once and for all, or she needed to act on them.
General Bryn, Egwene said. Have you been well? We've had a difficult time finding you.
He looked up and blinked. His eyes were red. Mother, he said. He nodded to the sitters.
I feel tired, but probably no more than you. I've been all over the battlefield, tending to all kinds of details. You know how it is.
Gawain hurried in.
Egwene, he said, his face pale. Trouble.
What?
He took a deep breath. General Bashir turned against Elaine. Light. He's a dark friend. The battle would have been lost had the Ashaman not arrived. What's this?
Bryn asked, looking up from his maps.
Bashir? A dark friend?
Yes.
Impossible, Bryn said. He was the Lord Dragon's companion for months. I don't know him well, but a dark friend? It couldn't be.
It is somewhat unreasonable to assume, Saren said.
You can speak with the Queen yourself if you wish, Gawain said, standing tall. I heard it from her own mouth.
The tent stilled. Sitters looked to one another with worried faces.
General, Egwene said to Bryn, how was it that you sent 2 cavalry units to protect us from the Trollocs on the hills south of here, sending them into a trap, and leaving the main army's left flank exposed?
How was it, Mother? Bryn asked. it was obvious that you were about to be overrun. Anyone could see that. Yes, I had them leave the left flank, but I moved the Ileana reserves into that position. When I saw that Sharan cavalry unit split off to attack Uno's right flank, I sent the Ileanas out to intercept them. It was the right thing to do. I didn't know there would be so many Sharans.
His voice had raised to a shout, but he stopped, and his hands were trembling.
I made a mistake. I'm not perfect, Mother.
This was more than a mistake, Faecela said. I have just returned from speaking with Uno and the other survivors of that cavalry massacre. Uno said he could smell a trap as soon as he and his men started riding toward the sisters, but that you had promised him help.
I told you. I sent him reinforcements. I just didn't expect the Sharans would send such a large force. Besides, I had it all under control. I had ordered up a Shanshan cavalry legion to reinforce our troops. They were supposed to take care of those Sharans. I had them staged across the river. I just didn't expect them to be so late.
Yes, Egwene said, hardening her voice. Those men, so many thousands of them, were crushed between the Trollocs and the Sharans with no hope for escape. You lost them, and all for no good reason.
I had to bring the Aes Sedai out, Bryn said. They're our most valuable resource. Pardon, Mother, but you have made that same point to me.
The Aes Sedai could have waited, Saren said. I was there. Yes, we needed out, we were being pressed, but we held, and could have held longer. You left thousands of good men to die, General Bryn. And you know the worst part? It was unnecessary. You left all those Shanshan across the ford here, the ones who were going to save the day, waiting for your order to attack. But that order never came, did it, General? You abandoned them, just like you abandoned our cavalry.
But I ordered them to attack. They finally went in, didn't they? I sent a messenger.
No. If it wasn't for Matt Cawthon, they would still be waiting on this side of the river, General.
Egwene turned away from him.
Egwene, Gawain said, taking her arm. What are you saying? Just because...
Bryn raised a hand to his head. Then he sagged, as if suddenly his limbs had lost their strength.
I don't know what's wrong with me, he whispered, sounding hollow. I keep making mistakes, Mother. They're the kind a man can recover from, and I keep telling myself that. Then I make another mistake, and there is more scrambling to fix it. You're just tired, Gawain said, voice pained, looking to him. We all are.
No, Bryn said softly. No, it's more than that. I've been tired before. This is like... My instincts are suddenly wrong. I give the orders, then afterwards I see the holes, the problems.
Compulsion, Egwene said, feeling cold. You've been compelled. They're attacking our great captains.
Several women in the room embraced the source.
How would that be possible? Gawain protested. Egwene, we have sisters watching the camp for signs of channeling.
I don't know how it happened, Egwene said. Perhaps it was put in place months ago before the battle began.
She turned to the sitters.
I move that the hall relieve Gareth Bryn as commander of our armies. It is your decision, sitters.
Light, Yukiri said. We... Light?
It must be done, Doasine said. It is a clever move, a way to destroy our armies without us seeing the trap. We should have seen. The great captains should have been better protected.
Light, Faecela said. We need to send word to Lord Mandragoran and to Thakandar. This could involve them, too. An attempt to bring down all four battle fronts at once in a coordinated attack.
I will see it done, Saren said,
moving toward the tent flaps. For now, I agree with Mother. Bryn must be relieved. One by one, the others nodded. It was not a formal vote in the hall, but it would do. Beside the table, Gareth Bryn sat down. Poor man. He was no doubt shaken, worried. Unexpectedly, he smiled. General? Egwene asked.
Thank you, Bryn said, looking relaxed.
For what?
I feared I was losing my mind, Mother. I kept seeing what I'd done. I left thousands of men to die. But it wasn't me. It wasn't me.
Egwene, Gawain said. He covered his pain well.
The army. If Bryn has been forced to lead us toward danger, we need to change our command structure immediately. Bring in my commanders, Bryn said. I will relinquish control to them.
And if they have been corrupted as well? Doasine asked. I agree, Egwene said. This smells of one of the Forsaken. Perhaps Mogadine. Lord Bryn, if you were to fall in this fight, she'd know that your commanders would be next to take charge. They might have the same faulty instincts that you do. Doasine shook her head. Who can we trust? Any bloody man or woman we put in command could have suffered compulsion. We may have to lead ourselves, Faecella said. Getting to a man who cannot channel would be easier than a sister, who would sense channeling and notice a woman with the ability. We are more likely to be clean. But who among us has the knowledge of battlefield tactics? Farana asked. I consider myself well read enough to oversee plans, but to make them? We will be better than someone who may have been corrupted, Faecella said. No, Egwene said, pulling herself up on Gawain's arm.
Then what? Gawain asked.
Egwene clenched her teeth. Then what? She knew of only one man she could trust not to have been compelled, at least not by Mogadine. A man who was immune to the effects of Sidar and Sidine. We will have to put our armies under the command of Matrim Coffin, she said. May the light watch over us.